from the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hello, everybody, once again to Talking Catholic. This is Pete Sanchez, and with me, Mike Walsh. You are listening to the official podcast of the Catholic community of South Jersey. And Mike, where are we today? This is not the vault, is it?
No, you're on the palatial Walsh estate in Glassboro, New Jersey. As a diocese, as diocesan employees, we just attended our Lenten diocesan retreat at the nearby Mary Mother of Mercy parish in Glassboro. And since I live nearby, I invited our guests to come back and do a quick podcast on two very important events that took place in the last 2 weeks that I think it would be good if the five of us sort of gave a recap on. And I didn't want too much time to go by. So instead of waiting until next Monday to bring everybody back into the vault, I said, hey, let's go visit my dining room. So, yes.
This is beautiful. This is, if I can try to paint a picture for these listeners, it's just a beautiful, feels almost rustic.
Yes, this is a very rustic house. That is very true. Though I will tell you that between the two, I think I might appreciate the vault. However, as I'm looking out the picture window of my dining room, watching a snowstorm rage outside, it is nice being in here as opposed to the vault.
It is. I feel like we could go ice fishing or something out here. When I said, it feels like one of those places where you could.
One of our guests is laughing at that because he actually is from a place where people do that. And I don't think this is it. But I think he appreciates some mid-Atlantic person thinking that this is what they have to put up with.
Well, I guess walking in, I one of the rooms felt like it'd be a cat. You know, I could imagine it a cabin where people would ice fish in Minnesota or North Dakota. So Mike, before we get to our main program, the big event here, we got some events coming up a week from today. In Cherry Hill, Mike, there's going to be the Catholic Business Network meeting of South Jersey. And that is March 9th, a week from today, a week from this recording. March 9th, 7:30 a.m. at the Woodcrest Country Club, 300 East Evesham Road, Cherry Hill. And a friend of the podcast who's been on before, a brother, Mickey McGrath, is going to be there. So he's going to talk about his work. He's an artist, writer, storyteller. He's going to discuss Lent in the workplace. So this will be Brother Mickey McGrath, and you can register, go to camdendiocese.org and go under events, or contact Sheila McGirl at sheila.mcgirl, M-C-G-I-R-L, at camdendiocese.org for more information. That is March 9th. I plan on being there, so come on out. And then, Mike, we got a few days later, on March 13th, we have the Theology on Tap with Father Nick Dudo, another guest of the show that we've had, talking about fishing for Lent. Funny, we're just talking about ice fishing.
Yeah. Did we officially decide that we're going to record that? Is that our normal thing now, just out of curiosity?
I am not sure that we officially decided. I think we should be there. I will be I will be MC that night.
Oh, you are? Okay. So, in that case, we should not just for that case, but we should definitely go. We should definitely do it. What day? What was the date again?
That is Tuesday, March 13th.
Okay.
And Theology on Tap, for the listeners that don't know, is a 20. It's a series, a discussion series for young adults in their 18, 19, 20s, and 30s, single and married. It's a great time. So Father Dick Dudo is director of priest personnel for the Diocese of Camden, the vicar for clergy, I think. Mm-hmm. Official title. So that starts at, doors open at 7, and there'll be food. It's going to be Tierna Nogue in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I forget the address right now. It's on Evesham Road in the, I forget the name of the plaza. But it's just a wonderful time. Come out, meet, engage other young adults. Mike, you and I probably have a Guinness, I'm assuming.
Yes.
At the Irish pub.
If necessary, so. I will happily fall on a pint of Guinness.
Sounds good. So it's going to be, that is again, March 13th, Tuesday, starts at 7. The doors open at 7. Father Nick will probably begin around 7:45. So come on out, say hello, introduce yourselves to us. And then, Mike, we got a week from 2 weeks, March 18th, we have the Faithful Food Drive.
Yes.
The fifth annual. And this is a really great event. It's in South Jersey, there's a individuals suffer from food security. One in six people and one in five children, they don't know where their next meal is coming from. So in response, our diocese, you know, the Catholic community of South Jersey, is going to every parish and school in the diocese is collecting food for local pantries and bring food donations to Mass with you on March 18th. The goal is to collect 150,000 pounds. So they're collecting canned tuna fish, pretty much cans, tuna fish, chicken, soup, vegetables.
One of our guests is mocking Mr. Sanchez right now for his very effective and specific delivery, which I disagree with. I think you're doing a great job. I don't know why somebody would ever say something like that.
It's all right. I know I'm doing a good job. Thank you, Mike.
He's also now claiming that you and I are BS artists, but you know.
Do we need to re-record this?
Nope, I'm leaving that in.
But so food donations can be dropped off. And what I recommend to do, and Mike, what might be good for our listeners, is to get a grocery bag, put it by the corner of your kitchen, and then, you know, maybe just as you go to the store, pick something up and then drop it in. You have 2 weeks to do it until the 18th, and then drop it off at your local parish. So that is going to be, again, the fifth annual food drive on Sunday, March 18th. And so come on out for that information. All of this is, once again, on camdiocese.org. And on the right-hand side, there is the events calendar. Mm-hmm. So this and more events are coming up. A lot of great, exciting things happening in this diocese. So, and Mike, how about we introduce our guests. Who do we have here in this rustic home? I love that word, rustic.
You know, we always take a photograph with every podcast. I've been looking around going, what would make a good backdrop for this so that people get a sense of this rusticness you keep talking about?
The wood-burning stove.
Oh, yes. That's right, in front of the wood-burning stove.
The wood-burning stove.
That's right. So that first voice you hear is the marketing communications person for the school's office of the Diocese of Camden, Mary Beth Peabody. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
The only person who has not said something off mic yet is Marianela Nunez, who has the longest title in the Diocese of Camden. So I'm not even going to try what's your title again.
Field consultant for the Latino Enrollment Initiative at the Diocese of Camden.
That's it. And then the other chatty guy who was off mic, who knew better, but decided to make fun of us anyway, Mr. Kevin Hickey from the Executive Director of Catholic Charities of Camden.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for all of you deciding to come here as opposed to going home on this cold wintry day. I'm very hopeful that none of you will die in a fiery car crash. So thanks for sticking around. But you're welcome to stay here as long as you need to.
Can I say that I wish that Mary Beth and I didn't have to share a mic, but Mary Nell and Kevin did, so Kevin didn't have his own mic. We got to be careful with that.
I was pantomiming to my colleagues the talkative nature of both of you because I knew after Peter's announcements, there would then be the back and forth between Peter and Michael. And I,
what do you think people listen in? Yeah, sure. That's what
the banter. We forgot the banter.
No, I'm pretty sure everyone. Fast forwards 10 minutes to get to the interviews. That's what I'm almost 99% sure.
Yeah, 99.999999.
Yeah, but anyway, for those of you who actually listen to these, thank you. And for anyone who skips forward, well, go ahead and start listening. So, in the last 2 weeks, Bishop Sullivan, of his own accord, called two major events in the Diocese of Camden. One was as part of the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops, their Lenten call-in campaign on behalf of Dreamers. These are the young people who are specifically benefited by a number of provisions within DACA, the legislation that helps protect non-documented persons within the United States. that is, it has become a bit of a political football over the last little more than a year now. And then the second thing he did was after the tragedy in Parkland, Florida, where 17 school students were murdered, he decided to take the unprecedented move of calling in the student leaders from all 9 Catholic high schools in South Jersey, the 6 diocesan schools, and then the 3 religious schools who are within the diocesan borders. These don't have, those religious schools do not have direct oversight by the diocese, but their Catholic identity stems from the Diocese of Camden and the Bishop of Camden. So we specifically asked for all 9 of those schools to send their student leaders so that he could have a very open, very frank discussion about gun violence and this culture of violence that has become so pervasive in our country, one that he is particularly bothered by, the fact that this seems to be a very American problem, to this degree anyway, that you don't see this in other countries, but you see it in the United States. He made mention of that several times. So what is it about this culture? It's not, at no time was anyone pointing the finger just at guns, was anyone pointing the finger just at people with mental handicap, but this overall culture of a problem. So the 5 of us, I think Mr. Hickey, myself, and Marinella had the benefit of being in both, and Pete and Mary Beth had the benefit of being in the schools one and doing an excellent article to wrap up the schools one, which you can find on the diocesan website. Both events were also covered by the media. You can find the Courier Post covered both. Philadelphia Inquirer covered the Dreamers one as well, along with a few other outlets. So if you want to read more about those from sort of a independent perspective, I highly recommend checking out Courier Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer. But I just wanted to bring everybody together and sort of get a feel for, you know, what really stood out for you. And I think I'd like to go in chronological order. So I'll go with the right side of the table and turn to Marinella and Kevin and say, you know, what did anything really stick out for you? Like, what, when you first heard that, let me start there. When you first heard that the bishop was doing this, what were your first thoughts?
Well, I felt it was, you know, such a great opportunity, especially for the Dreamers and for the students to have a bishop that cares so much about these issues, that's willing to host them and listen to them, because that's what he did. Like, he didn't rush to the time. He didn't care how long it was going to be. He just listened to them and to both groups. And it was such a good experience. And I thought it was great to be part of an organization that does these kinds of things for, you know, their people.
Maybe to add on to what Marinella was saying, I think what we were seeing, Mike, was a man who knows how to lead and who understands what his job is, what his role is. And I thought both of these events, we're lucky in this diocese to have, he's a very astute leader of people, and he understands how to use his office.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's not someone who would ordinarily be considered, say, an activist style of bishop. He certainly advocates for, you know, all the Catholic positions. That certainly goes without saying. And certainly his devotion to the Right to Life movement is, you know, cannot be besmirched. He's the one bishop, at least that I've seen, standing out on the street corner greeting every single contingent from the Diocese of Camden who goes to the March for Life parade in D.C. the march in D.C. But this, it was a little unusual for him because, you don't usually see this sort of a big media effect. He likes to go to the people, you know, he likes to go, you know, to the parishes, he likes to go to the schools. This was a rare occasion where he called everybody to him and said, this is so important that I need to bring my office to this and you need to come to me and let's have this conversation. Did you get the impression from the Dreamers, Marinella, that being summoned to the bishop's office, you know, added something to that?
Well, of course. I don't know if you probably read it, and Kevin as well, maybe all of us, the article from Mary McCusker that she wrote about it, and it actually ended with that quote from one of the Dreamers saying, thank you, Bishop, for really taking the time to do this for us, because nobody had ever listened to us this way. Mm-hmm. And it shows them that, you know, by sharing their stories and by speaking up, they have an opportunity to create change and to move people's hearts. Father Romano keeps bugging me because I was crying the whole time during this meeting. But how could you not do? Like, I think everybody there was so moved. It was such a good experience. For me, I'm an immigrant as well, but I didn't go to, like, any of those things a lot of them were going through. And that just, you know, it made me feel blessed, but it also made me feel that I was living the journey with them and I was getting to understand more of what they deal with every day, which I think we really need to do with people outside to get them to understand why we are standing for them and with them.
Yeah. And, you know, that was one of the interesting things with all the comments that the Dreamers who were in attendance had to say. And these were all young people, I would say, from between the ages of 18 and 30, probably, yeah, were in the room. And they, while each of them had a different story, they had a very similar through line. And considering these are not the stories you've seen on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. These were local people with local stories that were exactly the same as everything we've heard in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Washington Post. So those stories we hear all over the country are the same stories that are existing in South Jersey. You know, these are our neighbors going through this. Kevin, you know, in your case, you know, sort of hearing it as a non-Latino, as, you know, an Anglo like myself on the outside, you know, how were you touched by some of these stories?
Well, I'm a great student of American history, Mike, and I've at some point listening to them, I was reflecting on Civil War battlefields I had visited, Shiloh in Tennessee, Murfreesboro below Nashville, Gettysburg, all the ones in Virginia. And I was thinking about my forebears who came from Germany and Ireland and fought in the Civil War. And their right to be here was questioned. They were victims of prejudice, discrimination, all that. And I thought, And listening to these dreamers, I thought, okay, well, this is what my forebears were trying to preserve in this country, mm-hmm, during the Civil War. And so I certainly had the sense I'm listening to Americans. And it was just, it was a privilege to be there and to listen to them.
Yeah, that
was really a great afternoon.
And that really was something that Bishop, you know, hit a couple of times, was that these are Americans. These are people who have been here from infancy to maybe 3 years old, or who were brought here from infancy to 3 years old. And all they've ever known is this country. They really, you know, some of them were old enough that they remember the hunger that they felt, yeah, when they were back in the old country. But otherwise they are as American. I mean, one of the girls was there with her blue hair, and there were some strange piercings here and there. But at the same time, there were guys that, you know, had their own, had started their own companies. There was a woman there that was the parish secretary for one of our parishes. She's got a couple of kids. You know, these are all, they are all American stories.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these are not strange.
Yeah, I actually invited that one with the blue hair.
Yeah.
And she is the front page of the Star Herald this week. And her story is just such an amazing story. Like, you know, how she came here when she was 3 years old. Like, you know, she remembered the, you know, asking her mom for milk and her mom telling her, we need to save for your medicine. And so you have to have water. And just then listening to her story about saving money so that she could go to college, and then her father got ill, and then she had to spend it all on his illness. And so at the end, he died, and she was left without, you know, any money to go to college. And then she got a scholarship, and she's going to Rowan. Isn't that like the American dream, you know? Yeah. And so it's incredible for me that these young people – are dealing with so much just to pursue their dreams. And these are dreams, we were talking about being selfish today and being self-centered. But if you heard them, like all of them were talking about becoming someone, becoming who they wanted to be, but at the same time, being able to provide for their families in a better way, helping their mom, helping their dad, helping their sisters and brothers. Like, you know, it was a story that made you feel, you know, these are people who care about others, who care not only about their families, but about America as well. They want to give back, and we are not letting them if we take DACA away.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting. You know, I spent in my job, obviously, as part of my job, I had to keep an eye on what all the, you know, we put these things up. This we did a lot of stories for this. We took a lot of photographs, put them up on social media. Then I tracked what the secular media put up about the story as well. And, you know, I will say that the reaction to the story was definitely mostly positive. It was more than 50% were very supportive of the Dreamers and their plight and a desire to find some path for them to legal immigration within the United States and to keep them from being deported, because they are very much Americans. However, there was certainly great debate in the comment section as to what the best course of action was, if that is the case. And then there were others who just said, no, they're illegal, get them out. And it was interesting, because having been in the room with such wonderful stories, it was amazing to me that anyone could have such a callous appreciation for that, until you remember that the comments section of any news article is, you know, essentially where evil lies. It is unfortunately, people have the ability to say whatever they want without fear of retribution, so that's what they tend to do. And very rarely do they actually read the article past the headline, so they develop their answer, and that's what they write. So, which is another reason why you should never read the comments section, because they really aren't a true representation, other than people's terrible souls. Or maybe all people have good souls, but some of them have become a little blackened. I don't know. I couldn't give you the theological answer for that. But on our Facebook and on our Twitter feeds, it was amongst the most shared items we've ever had. And that was what I decided to hook into, is just how many people were sharing this, and all across, including the USCCB shared it for us. We were put in a couple of special packages that they released. And then you mentioned Mary McTusker's article. The Catholic News Service picked it up, and it's already been distributed across the country. It's been in the National Catholic Register, Catholic Philly, and the Boston's equivalent of Catholic Philly, the Pilot. So it's definitely a story that has resonated with people, that other services or other publications have decided to pick it up. But they were given good. The Dreamers did get some good news shortly thereafter. The Supreme Court decided not to hear a case, which left a lower court ruling in place that is giving them a bit more time. So, or else the DACA decisions would have had to have been done by this Friday. When deportations could have started as early as this Friday.
They're still in the limbo, though. But
that's the thing.
It's at least something to work with.
Right. But that, you know, going back to what Kevin says, you know, looking back at our Irish German ancestors, you know, there was never that element of kicking people out of the country. I mean, you didn't give them jobs, and, you know, they were left in tenements, but there wasn't this active deportation initiative that occurred back then. These young Dreamers have that also to deal with. So not only do they have to be able to be driven to get jobs and get education, but they have to pray that they're not deported at the same time.
And I think this is a call for people to put themselves in their shoes. Like, imagine if you were brought here by your parents when you were a baby or a toddler. And so you have very little, if not any, memories of your country of origin. Now, you're here, you went to school here, all you know is America, and then, you know, if they send them back, they're going to deal with a totally new country, like their family, their friends are here. So just thinking about that is terrifying for me. Imagine for those who are, like, actually experiencing them. And that's what we got from that meeting. Like, we got their pain. We got to understand it better.
Yeah. No, it was outstanding. If you haven't had a chance, I do encourage you to go back and read some of the publications that came out of it. Check out our social media, because it really was a wonderful opportunity that I will say. It made me feel very good to work for the bishop, made me feel very good to be a Catholic, and made me feel very good to be a communicator that I was able to get this kind of a message out. So that made us very happy. So switching gears a little bit, let's talk about yesterday's event. Yesterday's event was unprecedented in that it brought together 40-plus students from all 9 of the Catholic high schools. To my knowledge and the people I asked, that had never occurred before. And in that case, in this meeting, it was specific to what can we do about the culture of violence, particularly targeting high schools and, well, schools in general, even going back to, well, it's hard actually to pick a single point. We all know Columbine. Of course, every event is grievous, but the most grievous of them all, may, if there can be a degree to this, the Sandy Hook murder of, as Bishop Sullivan referred to it yesterday, the murder of the innocents in Connecticut, several, I think, in 2013 or 2015. So that's, and it's a big, unlike the Dreamers conversation that was very much focused on this call-in campaign, asking people to call their legislators, asking them to move on some form of legislation, not picking out any kind in particular, but some kind. This was a more open-ended conversation as to, let me hear from you as to what you think we need to do as young people. The thing Bishop mentioned was he's been most impressed by the Parkland students who took it upon themselves to fight back against this inability to get anything done, you know, and not just is, you know, remaining fairly apolitical about it, saying it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. We need to do something to stop this, and we need to figure it out. We need to figure it out now. This can't happen again. So with that in mind, you know, Mary Beth, did you sort of, like, after having come away from it, you know, what sort of feelings did you get as you saw it sort of unfold yesterday?
Well, it was really just kind of an incredible experience, and I think I have replayed so many pieces of it over and over since it happened. I thought that it was just incredible that Bishop Sullivan was so open to that and that he initiated that and wanted to hear about it. We talked about it in a staff meeting right after the event and said, boy, you know, what's kind of the party line going to be? These kids in Florida are so eloquent and passionate, and, you know, they're calling for strikes and walkouts, and what's that going to look like for us? And I sort of had brought that question up, and we talked about it at a staff meeting, and 2 hours later, not related to our meeting, but it was already in the works. That was already being thought about, and a draft of the invitation had been developed by Bishop Sullivan and I guess Father Romano. So it, just seeing that we were doing that, I cried a lot that day because I'm one of those weepy kind of people, and that just, it, very emotional, very emotional. And to see those students march in yesterday in their different uniforms with their poise and their eloquence and their good ideas, I think something that really struck me about it was that they didn't agree about a lot of things. And there was so much respect in that room. There was no, that's a dumb idea. It was more, wow, so-and-so from Paul the Sixth, you know, that's a really good idea. And what we were talking about was this, and we think we could build on that, even if they didn't, you know, some of them didn't think that a walkout was maybe the right answer, and others said, we can't do it soon enough. The fact that they wanted to make their faith an integral part of whatever it is they do was just speaks volumes about why they're in a Catholic school. Mm-hmm. I could go on, and I will give someone else a chance because it was a terrific experience.
It was, and it was for a person like myself as a PR guy, you don't usually hold events that you don't know what the outcome is going to be. They are fraught with danger, particularly when they're with young people. However, in this case, I was pleasantly surprised and mocked roundly by my colleagues who couldn't understand why I was so nervous about it. Not you guys, these other people.
I'm really
yeah, you people were all as equally anxious as I was. But other people who had never for a second doubted that the students were going to come in with great ideas were not shocked in the least, because we didn't prep them at all. As a matter of fact, obviously we didn't necessarily promote this, but administrators were not invited to this. You know, there were chaperones there from each of the schools, and we specifically asked for Catholic identity directors to come. Some of those happened to be the principal, but they were not invited to be a part of this because we really wanted to hear directly from the students. And as I don't know that any coaching happened. If there was, it wasn't apparent to me. But anything that's any preset ideas they had, sort of, you could kind of tell in the conversation that came that they sort of went away. And that's when that going back and forth really took hold. They came up with ideas that, you know, we've sort of talked in the office about, you know, what we thought schools should be doing and school students should be doing. And they did bring those up. And then they brought in all new things that we never even considered. Like one person, I think one or two people suggested that they need a diocesan. They wanted a diocesan wide spiritual event where every student from every educational institution comes together for a big mass at Campbell's Field in Camden, or perhaps at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, just so we can all be together. One of the students even mentioned it during the thing that it was great for her to be there, just from not necessarily a social point, but it's sort of a kind of a networking concept. Like she knew a few people that were there from the other schools through sports, but she didn't really know them until she came to an event like this and they got to interact with each other, which was something we never brought up in the preliminary discussions for this event, was, you know, what kind of interconnections were they going to make? And on their own, with no guidance of any kind, they were making all of these very mature decisions to interact with each other, which I think lends itself to another example of why, you know, we in general, me specifically, should have a little bit more faith in these young people. And I posted on social media later that that they really did do my heart good for all the awfulness we get to see on a daily basis. Man, those kids were just fantastic. Well, UP, what did you take away from it?
The same, Mike. I was very impressed. What I really enjoyed, the bishop talked about how he took, when he was first ordained a bishop, years ago, I forget, 13 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, Bishop Sullivan.
Yeah,
it's only been 13 years. Please forgive me.
He was ordained in 72.
In 72, but, yeah. A bishop. And one of the things he talked about is he pledged an oath to guide his flock, as it were. And that's what he wanted to do with these students. And it was just beautiful to see, after his remarks, he opened up the floor. And for about 45 minutes, almost an hour, you just heard the voices of the youth. And they were from Paul VI, or from Bishop Eustace, St. Augustine, St. Joe's Hamilton. They crisscrossed.
No, if you start, you got to finish the roster. Come on.
Camden Catholic, Holy Spirit, Our Lady Mercy Academy. St. Augustine Prep, Camden Catholic.
Again?
How about Gloucester Catholic?
Gloucester Catholic.
Yeah, a lot of Rams mad at you right now. And Wildwood Catholic.
Wildwood Catholic, yes. St. Yes.
Augustine Church.
Yeah.
Yes, and thank you, Marianelle. And thank you, Mike.
No problem.
But I think
there would have been hate mail if you didn't finish that list.
I know. I don't.
We have to include everybody, right?
We do. No, I'm glad we did. And I think what Mike was saying, the spiritual event, and that's something that they were keen on doing. And as well, what impressed me, talking with the bishop afterwards, what impressed him is they also wanted to include the larger community and the public schools, maybe kind of invite them to come together. And really, it's not only an opportunity to reflect on how we as a community come together, but also showcase how beautiful, you know, just showcase our faith. And it's the beauty of the Catholic faith. It's the beauty of the Catholic schools. And they were eloquent. They were articulate. They were passionate. I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed talking to them afterwards. And It was a day I've never experienced before in this diocese, and I'm very, very happy that it and I hope this is a start of maybe some sort of conversation.
Well, that was definitely the intent was to create these conversations. Fortunately, in the bishop's case, you know, he goes out to the parishes and the schools on such a frequent basis. They don't need to worry about not seeing him. But being brought in a, you know, we just to give a little, you know, raise the curtain a little bit. You know, we put a lot of thought into how we were going to set up the room. Where we're going to remove the conference table, where we're going to make it a big sort of oval that everyone would be around and talk to each other. And as we were sort of going through all the different permutations about how to set up the room, we realized that this is very much a business meeting, and we don't necessarily, not that it can't be, for lack of a better word, kumbaya-ish, but it was intended to be. This is a working meeting, and you are student leaders, and we want you to feel that there's an equivalency here for you and the administrators from the diocese and the bishop himself, that we're all sort of on an even playing field here right now. And you know, we really do want you to bring your A game. And man, I brought the A game. It was unbelievable. You were going to say something, Meredith?
No, I just really was thinking the same thing. The venue itself was really, you know, seeing them, they were the ones at the table. And the adults were sort of in the background, except Bishop and Father Romano, you know. But even at the beginning when we said, this is your time, but then we had the prayer session. And then Father Romano and Bishop each said something. So it could have started out as, oh, well, this is the adults. But boy, once that came to an end, they didn't even ask questions. They just listened. It was amazing. I mean, the students really, there was never a lull. They you know, took it from one another. So the venue I was commenting on.
Yeah. Too. How about you, Kevin, as sort of the non-educator in the room? What did you think coming from the Catholic Charities side?
Mike, I felt what was something that I was struck by was the absence of a righteous wrath, which I think their counterparts are displaying in Florida. Now, possibly that was because there were adults in the room. But, I was thinking about Pope Francis and indeed our leader, Bishop Sullivan. Both those men are righteously angry. I was struck by that, particularly like, well, we don't want to walk out. I think, walk out. This is the time to turn over the tables, I think.
Yeah.
I was struck by that.
Yeah. One thing we told, I forget how this was communicated specifically, but, you know, we told people that this, everything was on the table. For this case, anything could be discussed. Sure. Bishop, unlike, you know, and this has borne out this week, a number of other school districts, secular school districts in the area have decided to blockade any walkouts by their students. And Bishop Sullivan was quick to point out, no, not only is the right to protest an important part of our Catholic upbringing, though we do encourage and sometimes require that it be done in an orderly and, you know, administrated way. Procession is very much, a walkout is essentially a procession. It's to go from A to B. So a walkout done for a purpose, and in our Catholic high schools done with a spirituality to it, is in fact a procession. So some of the topics that have been bandied around, I think during that meeting, but certainly in discussions I'd had prior, was, you know, even a simple procession from the doors of the school to, say, a on-site grotto ending in a prayer service, that would be enough. It doesn't have to be a march on town hall or not that it can't be, but it doesn't have to be that. Right. But if you want it to be that and it can be done in a wise way, then sure, why not? But yeah, Bishop was very good about not stamping anything down. Now, he does want it to be done you know, I think we'd all like it to be done in a way that's that is unified and safe, obviously. We don't want anybody running off and getting themselves arrested or causing upheaval, which is something the kids themselves mentioned. Without anybody at the table having to say that, just a bunch of kids running around isn't going to help the cause. Yeah. It's got to be done for a purpose.
That's right.
Yeah. Man, those kids are smart.
Just speaking back on what you said about Bishop and being like a guiding father, as he said during this meeting, that struck me, you know, when he said that, because I felt the conversation went like, you know, like a father listening to his children about what they really felt. Like, you know, there was no filter in this. They just said what they were feeling at the moment and what they had been thinking about. I thought one of the quotes from one of the students, they said, you know, a protest is not enough. One day is not enough. What are we doing the 364 days of the year? We need to do something about it internally first, and we need to make sure that we keep that up, not for one day, but for the rest of the year. And they were talking about bullying prevention, like how hard that is when it happens in the schools, and how to, you know, keep our children away from that.
Yeah.
That's important. And they also mentioned, you know, the health, like mental health issues, and what, you know, how unfunded those programs are. Do we need to get into that? So I also was thinking during the time I was there that it was so respectful the way the students addressed the conversation, that, you know, we never got into politics. That's not what we wanted to do.
No.
That was not the intention. The intention was to take our Catholic, you know, identity and put it into this topic and say, how can we help? What can we do from this perspective?
Yeah, that was. It's interesting you mentioned the bullying. It was the kids themselves that said, hey, listen, if you look at all of, or not all of, but many of the school shooters, these were bullied personnel or bullied students who came back to cause harm. If that is something we need to address that prevents this from ever happening, let's address that. I think the kids, I don't know if they necessarily said it verbally, but if you look at the content of those discussions, basically what they were saying was this has to be a multi-pronged attack. It isn't going to be one answer. They did touch on guns, but far less than I anticipated. I really thought that might have been the low-hanging fruit that they all just kind of glommed onto, but it wasn't. They now, you know, I don't know why that we didn't ask them why you didn't, how come you don't want to take the guns away? But the fact that they didn't bring it up themselves, I think, spoke volumes that they realized that this was a multi-layered problem that's going to take a lot more.
I think there might have been one or
no, they did, but it was never as widespread. Yeah, it was never. It was only mentioned in passing a couple of times. Yeah. Never as like a 15-minute discussion on how best to get rid of AK-15s or bump stocks.
Yeah, and I think what I liked is they, it wasn't just students reading from a piece of paper. They were responding, going back and forth. It was an exchange of dialogue, and just something that struck me about the bishop is, his passion, what you're talking about Sandy Hook, and how his voice really cracked when he
he was there at the time, I think.
In Connecticut?
He might have been, well, he wasn't in Connecticut, but I think that he might have still been in New York when
Think so, yeah. He came here in 2013, yeah, so he would have been
more closely tied to it.
Yeah, he that his emotion when he just was talking about what happened to those kids, and I could tell in his voice he was struck by it.
Yeah.
And it just.
Well, hold on. I think Mary Beth wants to.
Yeah, shoot to Mary Beth.
No, I thought you wanted to defend the NRA for a second. I'm sorry. Was that what you were going for, Mary Beth?
That would not be.
Okay. Okay. Just checking. but no, you're absolutely right. It's these things coming after another. I was impressed that the kids brought up Columbine themselves. That, I mean, most of them that were there were not born when Columbine happened.
That was 99.
Yeah.
Right.
So right. But man, they brought it up pretty quickly. Now, they also are the ones growing up in a post-Columbine world, You know, it was interesting. They were talking about when they now have to, as students in schools all across the nation, they do this. But you now have the, what is it called? Not hiding in place. Shelter in place. They all have to learn shelter in place. And that's kind of cold. However, I never had fear going into school that I was going to get shot up. But I do remember a deathly fear in the early 80s of nuclear war, because we had so much training on it. You know, it wasn't duck and cover at that point, but there were other things we were doing. And I clearly remember walking around my house being very afraid that at some point the Russians would bomb New Jersey. Not that anyone ever bombed New Jersey, but mm-hmm. but that they would bomb New Jersey. And I got the sense in their conversations of that sort of similar, you know, they didn't say they never felt necessarily said they were unsafe. They mentioned that, you know, safety procedures can always be better. But it was that it had become so common to them to understand the sort of shelter in place as the equivalency of, you know, a fire drill. I was like, oh, man, that hurts.
Yeah, I'm talking about Columbine. I just was in I was a high school student then in Philadelphia, and I think right after that they put in a security guard right by the desk, and that was a scary moment. I remember going to school and hearing it on the radio, the stories of horrific and
that was awful. Fortunately, I didn't ever have to. Growing up in that generation, I never had. As soon as I realized that, you know, I think in my late teens that nuclear war was far less likely to happen than you know, we were scared into believing, I sort of let it go. But I tell you, you know, we do have a healthy fear of large gatherings, and not just schools. I mean, there was the movie theater that got shot up in Denver, the premiere of the first Christopher Nolan Batman. Or maybe it was the second movie, but where that happened. And there is a part of me that kind of worries sometimes going into public, like if I'm going to be around a ton of people, like at a Phillies game or an Eagles game or even something with far less security, the mall, you see malls getting shut.
A concert in Las Vegas.
A concert,
a nightclub in Orlando.
Exactly. These things are, you know, you're big groups of people, but the truth of the matter is we have to live our lives. We can't be afraid of moving out there.
That's right.
You know, this became a sort of a punchline after a while, but when the towers were destroyed in New York on 9/11, you know, we got to say, you know, we can't let the terrorists win. We can't let fear stop us from living our lives. No. And, you know, I did not get the impression that those kids were fearful at all. That I love being around young people. I'm scared all the time, so I love yes, people like Marinella who could just live their lives so freely. As you're about to drive home in the middle of a snowstorm, your mother's going to be so unhappy with you.
if I can ask a question, ask the question that Bishop Sullivan kind of ended with yesterday, open ended. You know, why is this happening? This is happening in the United States. It does not happen as much in other countries. It seems like why is this happening here? Why is this happening in America? This gun violence.
It's the rock and roll. We all know that. It's the rock and roll. They've been telling us that since the 60s. It's the rock and roll. I don't know, Kevin. Why does it happen here and not elsewhere?
There's probably innumerable factors. I was thinking there's some historians talk about violence, which is woven into American culture, has been since the beginning. You could debate that. I don't know if that's true or not. But there is this other notion about the lone person, that I'm an island, the rugged individual, the take direct action. Now we add on mental illness and the mental health services in this country are abysmal. Lots of people fall through the cracks. Through the cracks. I guess I was. That was probably a Freudian.
I was going to say there's nothing Freudian, but I'm sure it was. I'm leaving it in there. Then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure you put a lot of attention to the
you bet.
Floor.
That's right. The bishop will appreciate it.
Don't worry.
Put it in the headline.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Hickey calls something. Whatever. The distrust of government, which gets into this, the Second Amendment, and the whipped up fear that if we have gun control, it's a slippery slope. And the next thing you know, there'll be bivouacking soldiers in my house. You know,
yep.
I'm slightly exaggerating, but
When
I listen to him, I feel like I'm back in right before the revolution when the crown was putting.
How old are you?
I'm a very old guy. I'm like Patton. I've met.
Oh, you've had many lives. Okay, yeah. There you go.
I've said enough out of me.
That's nice. Reincarnation, too. I'm putting that in the bishop's thing.
That's right.
So that's in an email. But no, there is a truth. I know what you were saying before about the United States. We very much as a country had a very violent birth, you know, decade after decade after decade from the time we were founded, from the time we were colonized till today, quite frankly. So guns really are a part of our heritage. You know, people often say that as sort of a throwaway. But there is some truth to that. I don't necessarily say that gives a validity to the necessity of guns, but, you know, heritage is heritage. I am very happy to know that I do not have all the answers to all the questions, or for that matter, any of the questions. But I'm very happy that there are 40 young people within our diocese who at least have some ideas and seem to have the energy to try to move forward with them, and that we have a bishop who very much, not just a bishop, but diocesan personnel, who seem to be very comfortable with the idea of encouraging them, not the least of which is the four of you. So it was a great experience. It was a great thing to be around. I highly recommend you go back, if you haven't yet, to reading the reports that Mary McCusker did about the Dreamers, and that Mary Beth and Pete did about the high school students, and just get a feel for, you know, all of these stories that are very much important. And more importantly, and one of the reasons why we had both of them was to make sure that these things did not fall away, that they stayed in the front of people's minds and did not so easily get into the recesses where we often forget about, as we have seen in all the gun violence that's occurred in the past 20 years. So thank you all for braving the storms to head over to my house. It was great to have you.
That's your house.
Thank you.
No, that's fine.
We are all going to finish off with some whiskey, right, Mike?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. We're all finished off with whiskey. And
cheers, everybody.
You are all welcome back any other time to host a future podcast.
He officially said it.
That's right.
We're coming back here, everybody.
And you can also all go back to work and tell everybody you work with what my house is like. So you can the palatial estates of Mike Walsh. No, because I'm going to get yelled at that. Oh, sure, you let these four people be the first people to come over and see your house, but the rest of us work with you day in and day out. Yeah, this is terrible. Maria D'Antonio, my office, is going to stab me when I get back on Monday that she didn't get invited over. But I'll let her know I didn't want her to die in a car crash. You guys, I don't mind if we lose you. But, you married Ellen, but the rest of them are going to.
Muchas gracias, Miguel.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining me. Pete, talk to you next week. See you
Sounds
at the next
good.
Theology on Tap.
Yeah, and Mike, we have to say next week, you and I are going to embark on a new venture, not only with Talking Catholic, but with another podcast. I cannot wait. That'll be fun.
Okay. Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. And everybody tune in, and we'll talk to you again next week.